Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have a very interesting show for you today. It's always interesting when I have a mix of guests, someone from this industry, someone from that industry, and we sit down and we talk over a roundtable discussion. You love my guests because they're honest, they're open, and they're definitely opinionated. But before we get too much further into the show, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and share the show. Our guests are here to provide you with information, and you want to provide that information to your friends. Why? Because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. But before I introduce our guest, I want to show you something that she shared with me. Got my little CBD party going on over here, about to put it in the bottle. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in Southern California. But when you're ready for a CBD margarita from cbdparty.com, it doesn't really matter what time it is. So I'll tell you where I got this from. I got this from our first guest, Marlana White. She's like, Sharifa, take a load off. And so I ordered some of these products, and it's just so much to them. But our guest is HP High Priestess Marlana White. She's joining us today, and she's going to talk to us not only about her videos that she does on spirituality, but cbdparty.com. Good morning, Marlana. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for welcoming me back. I'm happy you enjoy your products. Awesome.
I haven't tried this. It's a party kit, a party, as you know, but the people may not know. It's like a whole kit that from cbdparty.com. It has the little flyer, the little brochure. This is the only thing that I'm like, okay, I got to wait until Monday to talk to Marlana about some of these products. So tell us a little bit about this one right here. What is this?
That's actually the CBD margarita. It's actually a drink that you can have. It helps you with anxiety, you know, especially a lot going on with the fear and all of the fear tactics, I even say. So if you want to just kind of relax, what you have there is the mommy meditation package, which is amazing. So it has a little bit of the body butter, a little bit of the drinks, a little bit of everything. And you had in your hand the shaker. So for some of you who don't have a margarita shaker and you need to shake your little CBD drink up, that's what you use. And you go ahead and get it started and get your day started, and you're relaxed throughout the day.
Yeah, so Marlana, let us say to all the people who are kind of concerned about Sharifa Hardy, there's no liquor in this CBD margarita kit. You know, I'm not that bad where I start off my Monday or my week with a drink, but I am going to have it a little bit later. Tell us about this one. What is this product right here?
That is actually the CBD body butter. So that is a mango butter infused with hemp. And so the way we make it is with calendula. It has lavender in it, it has chamomile in it. So it's perfect for a night's rest, or even just during the day when you want to smell good, look good, and feel good. So it just, again, helps you with that relaxation piece once again.
Okay, so when you say relaxation, and this is a body butter,
yes,
and you know, I'm one of those people, I love asking silly questions, and the main reason I ask silly questions is just like in school, you know, you're not the only one thinking that silly question, so I get to ask for everybody else. So how do you apply the body butter?
All over your body. It's actually a full body butter. If you just want to add it to your temples because you just need some relaxation in your temples, or even, you know, I've heard a lot of my clients say, even when it comes to allergies, just putting around this area, it relaxes that part of your area in your body that helps you with your sinuses. So it's just all in how you want to use it. You can put it on your feet, relax your feet, which also goes throughout your whole body. Everything we do is all about holistic healing. So therefore, if you just want to wear it to where you feel good, smell good, that's perfect. But if you also have an ailment, your shoulder hurts, or and you just want to put it in that one area, or you have an ailment, your leg hurt, or the baby even fell and hurt their leg or what have you, it's even sensitive enough for children.
Can we put it on places, like for me, like I'm like, okay, yeah, these people are about to drive me crazy. I might need to, you know, hit the temples right there with this body butter. And speaking of mental health, I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Bob Schmidt. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself today?
You look like you're doing great. And you know what? We're going to talk a little bit about what you do. Your focus is on mental health. You have a book, Disaster Mental Health Community Planning. But I'm like looking at your background and it just looks so peaceful. It looks so relaxing. You got the guitar back there. And it's like, it feels like after a long day, you could just come in, play your music and just relax.
Absolutely. Music. I use music in my therapy a lot.
How interesting. How do you incorporate the music into your therapy?
I find if people like music and then tell them how to use it. Keep the music on while you're doing mundane things so your mind doesn't spiral if they're anxious or depressed. It keeps people up. And there's a thing called bilateral sound healing. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I have not. I've heard of sound healing.
Okay, well, what this is music or nature sounds, and it sweeps from left to right. So you have to listen with headphones on or earbuds, and it gently calms the brain down. Usually it's the amygdala that starts going, gotta do something. And this just calms it down. And using that, it's like a shortcut to meditation, which is another thing I also teach my clients too.
Is that your meditation room?
No, I have a recliner right next to my bed, and that's where I meditate. I just go back and I can just shut off everything.
No, that's interesting because typically I find that people who meditate have a specific place that they go to meditate. It's almost like a mental note to their mind and to their body. I am getting ready to meditate. I'm going into this meditative state. So I was just kind of curious, but tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I'm a licensed professional counselor in Connecticut. Actually, I live and practice in Sandy Hook.
Oh, wow.
And my friend Sharon and I were very active in the recovery movement. So after a few years, she said, we should write a book, pay it forward for all the things we've learned, because most places are prepared for disasters, for physical needs of people, but they're not prepared for mental health needs. And so that's the focus of our book, Disaster Mental Health Community Planning. What we propose is, and show in the book, is that a community can prepare for the entire thing after a disaster ahead of time. What happens in a lot of communities, a disaster happens. I'm talking weather disaster, or I'm talking man-made disasters, where a shooting or something like that. Sometimes the town leaders are traumatized themselves. And then they're not functioning on all cylinders. But if you prepare ahead of time, you have a plan, volunteer collaborative groups, and you can take care of the mental health needs. For example, in Sandy Hook, first thing I did, I reached out to the executive director of the Connecticut Counseling Association. I said, can you get me a list of trauma-informed counselors? And I can bring it to the crisis center and distribute it. She said, oh, great idea. So you can do all of these things ahead of time. And you could do it not just for counselors, but for psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, marriage and family counselors. So you could have all of these things at your fingertips. And a lot of them would volunteer to help with right after a disaster.
Wow, I'm impressed and I applaud you. Congratulations.
I should hold up the book.
Yes.
It just came out in April.
Congratulations. So I want to talk a little bit later about how it was to launch a book during the middle of a global pandemic. It's been very interesting. And what I've seen, what I've seen, and it, to me, and maybe I'm the only one, which is why I like having a roundtable discussion, but I've seen that during this time frame, it has really affected people in different ways, but extreme ways. I have found that some people, it's just been, you know, positive for their business. Like all of a sudden, people want to read their book. I had one lady who had just so happened launched a book in March about teaching companies the best practices for having their employees work from home. She had been planning this book for over a year, released it in March, but it was just like the perfect storm. This is what people are doing right now. They're transitioning to work from home, or you have people who have been drastically affected as a result of the global pandemic. So we're going to talk a little bit about that later. But Bob, when you say Sandy Hook and you say mental health, this is one example where there was so much undue stress, especially with the Alex Jones and InfoWars of the world, who said, you know what, that never even happened. So you're already grieving, you're already going through this process. And then you have someone telling you that basically the government and everyone just made it up for money or for whatever reasons. Were you working with people who had to deal with that effect?
Yes, a couple of them. And they contacted the FBI to try to take some of the videos that were posted. But he inspired other people to do, you know, really hurtful things like that. Create a video, say, look, no, they're actors. This is why, because look, see, this child looks like this child actor, or this person could not have lived there because that's the address of a church. Well, her father was the pastor of the church. So that's, that's where she did grow up. So they would just take little bits of information and say, oh, no, that can't be true because this. And it was just devastating to people, devastating, and so cruel. So I was glad to see Alex Jones finally got his due.
Yes, because I think that's one of the instances, I've never seen anything like it in history. I've seen people with the 9/11 and their conspiracy theories, but I don't recall any other specific incident in history where people just went after the families of victims.
Apparently, it has happened before, and I think part of it is people don't want to believe that somebody could come into a school and kill 20 children and six educators. It just they can't believe it. It can't be true. And another thing, a lot of money came into the town. People were so wonderfully generous. They sent thousands of teddy bears and gifts for bicycles, things for kids, and money. And the money went to the most affected families. And then we saved a good portion of it for mental health for any school child or first responder or their families.
Interesting. I want to go ahead and thank you for sharing that, Bob. That's something I wasn't expected, but we learn so much and we share with each other, and that's how we grow as a people. I would love to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Oren Davis. And Oren is a research and consulting scientist, and his company is the principal investigator for Quality of Life Laboratories. Good morning, Oren. How are you?
Hi, Sharifa. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. I love your background. I almost want to be like, no, Oren, don't leave us. Don't swim away. Don't float away. It just looks like you're like out there.
In New York City, you kind of need virtual backgrounds because spaces are tight, and especially when you live in small quarters, you know, you don't want to show everything, and there's often a lot going on in the background.
You're telling on yourself, Oren. You haven't cleaned up your room.
It's a little small. It's just that you got to keep a lot in there.
Tell us about yourself and what you do.
So I earned the first doctorate in positive psychology, and I've been applying the principles of the science of human flourishing to the workplace. So I make workplaces great places to work. I help individuals and companies promote self-actualization. And a lot of the way that I do that is I look at the interaction between the work that you do and the processes of self-actualization and self-transcendence. So more practically, I'm helping companies with hiring. I help them with diversity, equity, and inclusion and employee engagement. I help people to become more creative. I actually advise a lot of startups, and that's most of my scheme. And then I do like the research on how to be creative, how to be a creative person, how to find flow, and really to get in the zone, and personal and professional development.
So when you work with the companies, you help them allow the individuals within the company, per se, the employees, have their own self-actualization. Is that correct?
Yes. And a lot of that is through personal and professional development to help them be good at what they do and actually do their best work for the company.
What are some strategies, tips, resources, suggestions in order to get an employee to give their best work or give their best to the company?
Probably the most important tip that I give managers is step back and let them do their jobs. Your role is as a coordinator and to be a resource to help your employees get what they need to actually be excellent. Most employees want to do a great job. That's the point. That's why they took the jobs. They want to do a great job. Don't micromanage them. Step back. Let them do what they need to do. Give them a good idea of what they need to do.
Absolutely.
Give them a deadline. Give them a definition of what a good job is. And then just step back and wait for the magic. They'll come to you if they need anything.
I think whatever your title is, as a scientist, I think I'm a scientist too, because I used to tell my managers that all the time, step back and let me do my job. So I think we kind of on the same page, just I don't have the degrees.
I think you probably then got a degree from the School of Hard Knocks.
Yes. I definitely have. I think you've been following my life. But it's interesting because employer relationship is the one topic we've been discussing on the show. It's because during this transition, you have thousands of people who either are laid off or you have those people who are still working, but now they're making a transition to working from home. So it's been an adjustment for the employee. It's been adjustment for the employer. And one of the things that I've seen is that there has to be a transition as far as how are we going to do this? I'm rambling, I'm long-winded, but let me give you an example. Two people in my family, my mother and my brother, who both work for large Fortune 50 companies, went from working in the office to working from home. And one of the things they had to say is they, to a certain extent, had the ability to work at home sometimes, you know, if they, you know, needed to. But during this pandemic, they were home, you know, 40 hours a week, but they were micromanaged more. You know, like my mother would go into the office, do what she has to do, but now that she's working at home, her managers want her to check in at 9 a.m. They want her to check out, you know, at 5 p.m., check out when you're going to lunch. So things that she wouldn't normally have to do while she was in the office, she now has to do because the employers are trying to really monitor what the employees are doing and how they are doing it. Have you found that to be true as well, or worked with that?
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of it, and I've been trying to get the employers off of it. This is an office, not a kindergarten, and you don't need to have an eye on everybody all the time. As a matter of fact, this is where you need to have more trust, not less.
Yeah.
Because people are now juggling much more difficult situations and much more crowded houses, and so the conditions are far less favorable. So you've got to let people run it their own way. In their own homes. You don't know what they're dealing with, and you don't know what they've got in the background. See, I've got a mysterious background here. You have no idea what's going on behind me, and that's the whole point. And, you know, if I were working in a company, part of the whole point is you don't know. You can't know.
Right.
So let people have control of their own lives. Monitor them less. Trust them to get their jobs done well by the time they're due.
Yes, I also have another friend who actually works for Google, and one of the things that he told me changed was he had been working from home for some time. But as a result of this, one of the things that they implemented is you had to be available during the course of your day for a video conference. Before it was just like, oh, he's at home, he's kind of doing your thing. You know, he could have been anywhere. He could have been at the beach. He could have been anywhere. But now they're like, no, we want to conference you. We want to see you. We want to know that you're actually working. So it's been a change. Definitely something I want to discuss further, but I want to introduce our next guest who has been sitting so patiently and supporting everyone thus far. And one of the things that I talk about it to people in fulfilling their dreams is find out what you're passionate about. And usually what you're passionate about or your natural talent is what will provide for you in life. Like me, I was that little kid. My mother couldn't shut up. She was always like, why are you talking? Why are you still talking? But now, you know, because I was always like, why? Why? That was my favorite question. Why? Why? Why Sue got on that red shirt? Why Bob drinking that drink? Everything was why? 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 You know, but look at me now. I'm a talk show host. So I'm kind of assuming here, but I want to introduce our next guest, Sue Henry of Sue Henry Talks. Were you always talking, Sue?
Oh, yeah. My tagline should be Sue Henry Talks because no one gets the silent treatment from her. My husband should be so lucky, you know.
Is that a good thing? Do we want the silent treatment from you?
No. You don't. And but even when I'm mad, I don't give you the silent treatment. But if I'm really quiet, I have six kids, they're all grown now. But if I was too quiet, they would run up and say, Mom, do you need your inhaler? It was never, are you mad?
Mm-hmm. So where did you come up with the name Sue Henry Talks?
A speaker. Mm-hmm. So it just made a lot of sense. So I had always wanted to be a speaker. My first big speaking gig was in LA at the Biltmore Hotel from this little town in Minnesota. And I fell off the stage and I thought that was the end of my illustrious speaking career. It took me a while. It took me a couple of decades to get back. But when I decided, when I knew that I was going to have a company, Sue Henry was already taken because there's a famous fiction writer and everything. And I thought, what describes what I do? And talking made a lot of sense.
Now, Sue, I think we glossed over that a little bit. At least I think you did. Like, you fell off the stage. Let's go back to you fell off the stage. I love detail, you know, because we can learn from that. It may sound funny. We may be laughing, but there are people. And it's weird. People say one of the biggest fears that everyone have is the fear of public speaking. So what happened? You said it was some years after, and then you got the courage. Tell us what happened, Sue.
So I was in this little town of probably 3,000 people when I graduated. And when I was a senior or when I was a junior, there was a guy who came in and he spoke to the whole, you know, 7th through 12th grade. And he was so good with his stories and so mesmerizing and engaging that even the 8th grade boys sat still and were quiet. And I still remember that part. I don't remember what the guy spoke about or anything. I just knew in that moment that that's what I wanted to do. I had no idea what I was going to talk about. I just knew I wanted to have that kind of an impact on people. So mm-hmm. The first thing I did was I tried out for the school play and I had a secondary role and I practiced and I knew my lines and dress rehearsal was fine. But then the next night for the real deal, I froze and I forgot all my lines. And I thought, okay, well, this isn't going so well. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, high school counselors, when they'd say, what do you want to do when you grow up? I'm old enough, I'm 65 now, but I'm old enough where at that point it was you were a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher, basically, you know? And so when I said I wanted to be a teacher, all they did was roll their eyes and tell me to be realistic. And
why couldn't you be a teacher? Why couldn't you be a teacher?
Well, I didn't want to be a teacher. So at any rate, I went in and I didn't want to be a teacher because I didn't want to have students like I was who got their work done fast and then would terrorize the rest of the classroom. So then I had this opportunity. Do you remember back in 1973, baby food jars still had codes on them, but they did not have labels as far as with the expiration date clearly printed for people to know. So I was part of an organization that we went in and there were two little grocery stores in my town and you went in and you took the codes and then you decoded them. And then you sent that in. And while I was sitting in this little grocery store, a woman came in, opened up a jar of baby food, put her finger in it, licked it, made a grimace, put the lid back on and put it back on the shelf. I kid you not. And so at any rate, I was one of six people from the US who was invited to the Biltmore Hotel to report on our what we had found and the things like that. And I stood up there and I had practiced. I wasn't going to have a repeat performance of forgetting. And I did a really good job. I was so excited. And then at the end, they lined up the chairs so that we were So our backs were to the auditorium, if that makes sense. And then they stood at the back by the curtain so they could take our picture and have everybody in the background for this memento. And what happened was, Grace is not my middle name. I sat on the chair, the back two legs went off the end of the stage. I tumbled head over heels 3 feet onto the floor. They came up, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And of course I was mortified. And it was 1973 mini skirts. And the only thing I could think of to say was, "Did my underwear show?" Well, of course it did. I had a mini skirt on. So it was mortifying to say the least. But it took about 20 years before my passion became greater than my fear, and I couldn't hide from it any longer, and I had to step forward.
Wow, you are fun, Sue. I'm gonna have to come hang out with you. That's why Marlana keeps coming back, because I just hold on to people. I just keep them. I'm like, you gotta come back, because I heard so much in what you had to say. You said Grace was not your middle name. I think Marlana handles the Grace, but I'm just curious. This is an aspect of curiosity for me.
You froze?
The glories of internet.
I know it is, and Zoom especially now. If only we'd have bought stock in Zoom back in January, right?
Yeah, it zoomed right up. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I love it though. I had to come in and shower quick this morning because I had to help milk cows this morning.
I thought it was mine that froze just, so I was a little worried because I ordered a router, but it's not coming, a new router, but it's not coming till Friday.
We dropped her. Oh, you're the host now, Bob.
Well, welcome everybody, and thank you for coming. Tell us some more about your background and what kind of talks you give.
What kind of what?
What kind of subjects you talk about, some of your keynote
For speaking, what I did for many years is I spoke on using social media, but applying good networking skills into social media rather than just going in and pitching everybody all the time, which we tend to see, especially in Messenger. So that's, you know, so I have been very fortunate to have, I was with an organization, BNI, so I was invited to speak on a lot of national and international stages, and
I'm back.
We missed you.
Did Marlana, welcome, did somebody back jump in there and just start hosting the show? Because I don't know, for some reason I had some tech. You were hosting for me, Sue?
No, Bob was hosting for you.
Thank you, Bob. You got me, Bob. I appreciate you. Marlana, tell him it's usually not like this. I usually don't have
the first time I've ever seen it.
Internet. I don't know what happened, but I want to go back to my question for Sue. I guess they didn't want me to talk to Sue, but I was curious about something that you said. You said you were so fast, you did your work, and then you would terrorize the class. Is that correct?
Yeah, in elementary school, I was given 3 extra vacations that the other children weren't. Is that a nice way of putting it?
Is that another way of saying detention, or?
Yeah, that was that they asked me not to come to school for a few days. Yeah. And then when I was a senior, or when I was in 6th grade, I can remember they put me in this little closet. I'm not talking like they locked me in a closet like it was a bad thing. But they had the speed reading machine in this closet. So because I'd get done with my work so quickly, they would, and then of course I would talk to everybody and disrupt them. So they had me go into this closet and start teach myself how to speed read. And it was this old machine that had this light, and then the light would just go down the text. And then at the end of every whatever, then you would take this test for comprehension. And I remember thinking, it's kind of ironic. I get done with my work quickly, and now they're going to teach me how to do it even faster. Interesting. But it was a skill that, you know, so all through that year, I was able to go in and do that. And it was phenomenal. And then at the end of that year, we left. That was when I was raised in suburbs of Chicago. And then from there, we went to Minnesota. My parents bought a farm, and it served me well, but it was just I was glad that they gave me something else to do, because it was really fun to challenge myself.
That, you know, that was a wonderful answer, Sue. I don't know. Today's Monday. Everything is all over the place. I'm like, Lord, let me talk. Excuse me for a minute. I'm going to need to just have a moment with the Lord, okay? Lord, it's 8:30. Just let me get through the next 30 minutes, and then you can do whatever you have to do. But back to, you know, you got to talk to the Lord sometimes. Bob, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. Work with me, Bob.
Yeah.
Let me ask my question quick, because I don't know what the good Lord is planning for the future. But you were I was curious about what you had to say. Okay.
I think this question's jinxed. She needs a whiteboard to write it down quick.
She's been one of the mysteries of our universe this morning, but
I told you I kind of came in relaxed this morning. Today really seems like more of a relaxed day. We're just gonna blow through it today and just see what happens.
That's it. Well, I have a phrase. I have a phrase for this. Schmidt happens.
There it is.
Oh, there you go.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I usually go, it happens. Yeah. But you know, in the scheme of life, as this is the worst thing we have to deal with, we're pretty blessed.
I must say, I did invest in Zoom last year. Like, someone gave me like a tip last year. It was around March of last year, and I bought Zoom. I was preparing to buy Zoom right then, but it was another Zoom stock that was out. And that one was rising because they were waiting for this. And then when this stock came out, it rose real quick, and then it plateaued. And then in February, it like doubled. It was
so
crazy.
You still have the stock?
No.
Oh.
I was so upset.
Isn't that the way it goes? Yeah. I know. I learned about the three main companies that they're saying are going to come up with the vaccine and or, you know, the medicine to help people so they don't get quite so sick. And I keep watching those stocks, just waiting for one of them to take off. And then maybe we could sell the farm and live happily ever after, right?
Yes.
That sounds like a great plan. You know what I think is amazing, by the way, as far as it goes for you, Sharifa, what I think is amazing here is you get such great guests that you can actually step out for a couple of minutes and we're still going to have a good time together. That's what I call a good boss. Yes. That is good boss.
Did you notice that, Oren? I just like, you know what? I don't even have anything to say anymore. I don't even want to be a part of the show because I don't know what's going to happen. It's like you guys have your own show. Take it away.
But I think you demonstrated the answer to your question before is that you bring together a great group of people and you give them some good guidelines and you're just facilitating the magic and look at it. I mean, you got it.
That's what I tell people all the time because people tune into the show, especially my friends when I first started, and they were like, I kept waiting for you to speak. They were like, everyone was talking and you barely said anything. I'm like, I'm the moderator. I'm here to moderate the conversation and keep the show going. I'm not here to talk. People didn't tune in. They didn't come here to hear me talk. They came here to hear Sue Henry talks and Oren Davis and H.P. Marlana and Bob Schmidt. So I'm just going to sit over here and while y'all talk, I'm going to keep talking to the Lord because this never happened, but today on this Monday when I had 2 hours of sleep, this wants to happen. So, hey, the beauty of the Roundtable Talk Show, like I tell people when they keep emailing before the show, Sharifa, what's going to happen? What are we going to talk about? I don't know. We go wherever the conversation goes. We talk about whatever as a group collectively want to discuss. So I used to go,
Especially in times like this, I think we've been learning again and again and again, Schmidt happens.
Yes, I love it.
Schmidt happens. See, I hope I'm back. Like, come on now, give me like 25 minutes to finish.
Just ask
this
another
show.
Question and you'll find out. Just ask a question.
just not one of the jinxed ones.
Yeah, no, don't ask the same question.
No, I'm gonna ask this question. Okay, I'm glad you all are finding this funny. That's what I'm glad. You know, we talking about Sue Henry falling off the stage, and I can't even get an internet connection. So, like Oren Sish, you know, things happen. My question: I want to get back because I want to be a good parent. right? So I was trying to learn from you, Sue. One of the things that you said is that you were fast in school and then you would terrorize the other kids. And I thought that was just me. I was that kid that was so smart, I could get my homework done or my classwork done in a matter of minutes and I was finished. So again, I was like you, I would go harass everybody in the class. So my teacher was like, you cannot do this. You have to sit down, you have to be good. And I couldn't help myself. I tell people that if they would have had ADHD when I was a child, oh, I would have had it. Cause I was all over the place. I was, you know, you can see I haven't changed much. But I wanted to know how your parents handled the situation, Sue, because I tell people, my mom, they didn't give me medication. They called my mom. And my mom is the one who broke me of that habit, because the teachers would call her. They would say, Sharifa, she's so intelligent. She finished all her work, but she just won't stay in her seat and she won't stop talking. And my mom said, well, give her some more work. And that's how I learned to stop talking and to stay in my seat, because if I didn't, they were just going to give me more and more assignments. I didn't want to do them. So Sue, as you know, how did your parents handle that?
I don't think the school ever called them about that. It was always brought up at parent-teacher conferences. And that was at a time when parent-teacher conferences, in our area, the kids go to the conference with the parents, but then that didn't happen. And I always knew that that was going to be a comment, never knew what else they were going to say about me and stuff. So there wasn't any repercussion from my parents. And I just kind of bothered the people around me rather than going. I didn't really get up out of my seat and go all over. So I don't think it was an ADD or ADHD kind of an issue. I just think that I was bored and it wasn't. But when we moved to Minnesota, by the time I was in eighth grade, the teachers here, and I don't know if it was because of a smaller school, they would let me bring a book. And then once I got my stuff finished, I could just open my book and start reading. Mm-hmm. And that made a huge difference for me.
Mm. See, I had to learn how to contain myself. I want to go back over to Bob real quick. Let's talk about your book specifically. What are some key things that a community can do when handling a disaster of any type?
Well, we talk about is how to prepare for it and then have everything in place. However, the book can be used if you didn't read the book, but then after a disaster, right after a disaster happened, you picked it up, you would form collaborative groups of volunteers and assignments. Somebody might be in charge of getting the Red Cross or FEMA, contacting them. Other groups would be in charge of finding a facility. Another group would be in charge of gathering groups of mental health providers that are willing to volunteer their time. And then what most places do, they do short-term work. They'll check on the physical health, see if anybody needs medication after a disaster, see if they're missing any family members and stuff. But then after that, nothing. And what we found is the people that are close to a disaster, whether it's a weather disaster or an act of violence, up to 33% will suffer from acute stress disorder. One third. If they are receiving trauma-informed services within the first month, they'll have a good chance of not getting PTSD. If they don't get half of that group will end up with PTSD. And Wow. That's a lot tougher to deal with. What we also learned is a lot of people don't realize not every provider is trained in trauma. So we use the term trauma-informed. Are you a trauma-informed counselor? That means you understand trauma, you know the symptoms of trauma, you know how it affects the brain, and you have at least one or two treatments, techniques that you can use to treat trauma. So for me, I had no trauma training right after the disaster. And so I had crisis training. So I volunteered at the crisis center. And my friend, who was a trauma specialist, she said, don't you dare take any clients until you get training. So I went on a quest to learn as many techniques as I could. And what I found, so now I recommend to all mental health people, get training, because once you recognize trauma, you'll find that all, just about everybody has had some small traumas. The large traumas you recognize right away, but often a small trauma that happened in childhood, and it affects the whole life if they have never cleared it and resolved it and understood how it affects them.
That's interesting. I found that to be as true as well. One of the things that happened to me when I was this kid, right out of high school, I worked for Transworld Airlines, and we lost one of our planes over New York City. It was TWA Flight 800 that blew up over New York.
I remember.
And I was a customer service supervisor, so I had to talk to a lot of the families of the victims. And I always tell people, you know, it's one thing when you lose someone's luggage, but then when you lose someone's child, you know, what do you say to them? How do you get that same person and convince them to get back on the plane, on one of your planes, and fly to New York City? There was a high school out of California that was going to New York City for their high school graduation. And the whole group was lost on the plane. So it was a very, very traumatic event. But I tell people, it took me years to really understand how much that trauma had affected me personally. And one of the ways that I saw that show up over the years that I started doing, that I didn't really make the connection for years that I was doing, was just simply telling people, I love you. And I would be like, I love you. My kids are 23 and 26 now, but like all their lives, they might be going to the corner store and I'd be like, I just want you to know I love you, because you never know when that time is going to be the last time. And what I found through speaking to the families of the victims is that we always think that everyone is on good terms, that everyone's happy and they're getting on the plane. And some of these people had left on bad terms, or maybe they weren't speaking to their family members and their family members never had an opportunity to say, I love you, or to say you are important to me, or I appreciate you. But after that happened, Transworld Airlines had the employees go through grief counseling and that sort of thing. And I went through it, but I was a kid. Like, I was like, oh, okay, we sit in this class. It never happened to me. But years later, I'm like, whoa, that did impact me.
Absolutely. And in a way, you were kind of a first responder. You had to communicate to people this tragic event and defend your company without sounding like you're defending the company. What we found in our research is that first responders don't always realize they need help. So, for example, in Sandy Hook, the police, the fire, the medical professionals who had to examine the bodies and stuff, they were all traumatized and thought, well, I'm a professional. I should be able to handle this. And some of them waited 7 years before getting help. And it was really hard to help them because the trauma was so deep and it had already messed up their lives. A lot of marriages fell apart. The residual effects are just devastating. So in the book, we really emphasize understand trauma and get help. Just get help, talk to somebody. Don't, if you think it'll go away, you're wrong. Trauma doesn't go away like a bad day. It just doesn't, it stays with you and it just destroys your life if you don't get the right kind of help.
I'm just interested in finding out, how does your book and what you've learned help with today's time? Like, what, with everything that's going on, to me, this is another, you know, this pandemic, this is traumatizing. A lot of people are traumatized. I just wonder, what is your advice to those people? Because I've been sitting here wanting to say that for like the last 2 minutes.
Okay.
I just want to know.
This is a worldwide disaster. It's, and that's the irony of the book, is that it came out in April 9th is when the publishers finally had it out. And if just a few weeks earlier had it happened, we could have put something in about it, because it's the same thing is happening. The healthcare workers are our first responders. Think of it like this. They're like soldiers on a battlefield. They're always watching. They're in hypervigilance. They're watching, you know, and did I wash my head? Did I touch my face? Is my mask on right? So that constant thing day after day, plus they see their colleagues getting sick and some dying. So how different is that from a soldier on a battlefield? It's not. So they're going to suffer PTSD, and probably much higher than 33%. But they're so busy working, a lot of them aren't getting help. Now, we have a lot of hotlines, which are helpful for stress. But you need therapy. You need therapy to process. Your amygdala, excuse me, is going crazy every time you go into work. It's going, oh my God, oh my God. And that's really not healthy, because you're returning to the battlefield. At least soldiers, they take them out for a few weeks and then they put them back for another tour. We're not doing this because we needed so many healthcare workers. So it's going to be rough. All the people who haven't had a chance to grieve because they couldn't go near them or they couldn't visit their parent in the nursing home. We had a friend in the Lions Club who died, a good friend of mine. Didn't die of COVID, but we couldn't get together, and the Lions had the ceremony that we get together, and it was just heartbreaking because we never processed it. So you're gonna have all of these people now. A lot of them are gonna start coming back to work, but they'll be carrying this emotional burden. And they're gonna be out of balance. They'll wanna get back to work, the majority of them, but there'll also be that fear. Well, what if my cubicle is too close to that? Well, what about that person? You know, they're a loud talker. And I just heard today on TV, if you're talking loud, you're spreading the germs more.
So, wow.
Just scary things and thoughts. So employers are gonna have to understand what the people are dealing with. For example, domestic violence was on the rise during this. Some people who didn't get along to start with and then are locked up together, that's awful. And so, you know, explosive behaviors and maybe physical violence. People going back to work are like dazed from all of this. So kind of devastating. But I know
day stress.
I'm sorry.
We also see a lot of the everyday stress in the workplace. I mean, employers, like you're saying, employers should know, but the thing is, in many cases, they don't, and nobody wants to bring that side of themselves to work. But I mean, we also have, you know, just on a general basis, for example, a lot more stressed parents, people that have got, you know, kids under 18 at home, and you know. Whereas in the past, they could just say, you know, go to school and get out of my hair for a few hours, but that's no longer an option. And especially close quarters, you know, I see my line or not, I'm guessing you know.
Well, I have an 18, 19-year-old, and I'm in the house. Actually, it's just the two of us. I was in the house all by myself, but everybody around me has kids that are in private school. They have been working. They're trying to work their regular job, plus work with their children. They turn into teachers themselves, and some of them are teachers themselves and have their own kids, and everybody's house is crazy. Mine is not. Thank you, Lord. But yeah. I see it all around me, and those are the people that I usually reach out to and help. Absolutely. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks with 3, 4, 5. So, you know, so I think you said you had 6 kids at home. And that's something, and that's one of the reasons why we need to have the trust, is that people have to manage not only their households, but, you know, as Bob was talking about, their own mental health. And that's one of the reasons why employers really need to step back and let people manage their own lives. Because if you try to add extra stress to this, you're going to have, you know, bigger mental health issues, and you're going to have people that are not performing as well if you don't give them the chance to manage themselves.
Yeah. It seems to me like the learning curve has to be so much bigger right now. We had even new people coming on at my full-time job. I actually worked for the government full-time. My full-time job, like, we had new people coming on. during the pandemic. And it's like, what do you do? How do you teach them? How do you train them? All of that. And you're having to do it all remotely. It is what it is. So you just have to figure it out. But I must say, they have been so, I could say they have been very kind, very understanding. You know, people have been going through different deaths or, you know, people illness, you know, people in their family ill, whatever. And they have been very understanding. I was surprised. I was surprised how understanding they've been.
One of the things that Bob said that was very interesting to me is when you mentioned trauma and you mentioned the soldiers, one of the things that I'm very passionate about is getting more PTSD services and therapy for everyone in America. I believe there isn't one individual in America who doesn't suffer from some form of PTSD. I think it's like when we take a look at physical abuse and verbal or mental abuse, physical abuse, if you can see the bruises, if you can see the blood, it's like, okay, yeah, this person has been abused. But because it's verbal, it's emotional, and we can't see the bruises, we tend to just kind of brush it under the rug. It's the same thing with trauma. Because they're soldiers, we say, oh yeah, he went to war, of course he has some trauma. But everyone has trauma. But usually, like Oren was saying, with companies, the company, if we have to go to work, they don't want to hear about your problems or your emotions. They want you there at 9 o'clock. And you usually, if something traumatic happens to us, it doesn't matter what it is, we still, for the most part, have to get up, go back to work, put all that out of our minds and just focus on our jobs.
And it's hard, and you're not functioning on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. You're making a lot of mistakes because your mind is somewhere else. And that's why the right kind of help is so important. And I just want to comment on the homeschooling. My neighbor said after 1 week, said, you know, after the third day, I had to suspend my child. So it is stressful. It is stressful. Mine are all grown up.
For teachers.
What's that?
A new level of respect for your teachers.
Yes. Jimmy Kimmel said, he said, I think teachers should get paid $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might have been Jimmy Fallon, one of the Jimmys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I've seen the memes long before this pandemic.
Yes, they definitely do. I've seen the memes, you know, about the homeschooling and different things like that. It's like one of the comments that made me laugh is the children are going to go back to school and they're going to be telling the teacher, that's not the way my mom said do it.
You know what
I mean? Oh, yeah. They're doing that anyway.
That's true.
Actually, one of the best examples of people that everybody's telling them how to do their jobs. And I think this is probably one of my favorite examples of just step back and let them do their jobs, is that teachers know how to teach. They're trained to teach. And it is amazing how many people, how many armchair folks are telling teachers how to teach. They've never been up in front of a classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Not only how to teach, but I tell people, my kids are 23 and 26. I'm so grateful that they're not small kids or I have to teach them, because I would have to come up with excuses, especially when they get too far into math. I don't know. Go Google it, because I wouldn't be able to help my kids at all. I tell you that.
I would not have been the best right now. I remember when my daughter was younger, they were learning about Wells Fargo. Go figure, mm-hmm. right? And the whole history behind it. And we stayed up all night and prepared her. And then she had a test the next morning. I mean, I was out on the floor creating little things just so she can see how it actually worked with the gold and all of that. And all I know is she didn't do well in that class. I said, after that, I said, you need a tutor. I can help you, because I'm not going to get frustrated. Because I was so frustrated. I was like, this is not you're going to need a tutor.
Yes, but were you like the night before it turned in, you're like, we finished our project, I want to know what grade we got. It was like,
right. And then I felt like such a failure. So I just thought, right now, I would not have been the best mom during this teaching, this whole pandemic. I would not have been.
Yeah.
My child, your kid.
Yes, mine would too. But they found some convenient way to get them to ask somebody else. That's when you use that go ask your father line. Like, your father's in charge of education. That's his job. Because, you know, leave it up to me. The teacher would be calling me like, Sharifa, We need to talk to you. How did you even come up with this? So you mentioned your kids are older. How do you think you would have done during this time?
I don't think there's enough money in Fort Knox to pay for the therapy it would take to get them healed after I tried to home teach them.
That's what you call an answer. That's what you call an answer.
Well, I have 5 girls, 1 boy. Every day at our house was a PMS day. Oh, look, the sun is shining. What do you mean? They'd run to their room and slam the door and leave us alone to punish us. I can't even fathom what it would be like if we were trying to do homework together.
Yes.
Me either. Oh, no. Mm-mm.
But we're learning. We're learning a lot about ourselves. You know, one of the things that people say is going to be a lot of divorces and a lot of babies after this. So, yes. You know, I'm hoping more for the babies and less of the yes. divorces. One of my friends at the beginning, it was like a week, went 3 people I knew wanted to end their relationships. One was divorced. The other 2 were in a relationship. They wanted to break up. I talked them out of it. Then one wanted a divorce. And I had to tell her, I said, you know, this really isn't a good time, right? I'm like, you never know what's going to happen. You may need to go live in the woods or something. You know, you may need someone to carry the firewood. Like, get through this first and yes. then figure out what you want to do.
I've been married twice, and I kept saying, there's one of my husbands and his child, and which is my son as well. I said, I'm calling both of them. One knows how to build a house from scratch. They know how to build a well. They know how to farm, you know, and I farm and I plant as well. And then I said, his daughter, I said, oh, yeah, I'm calling her too, because she's just plain lucky. I said, so between the two of them, oh, we will be okay. I know who to call if it comes down to us having to just live in the woods. I already figured that one out.
Yeah, but you see times are changing when dating profiles have to change. Like yes. before they would be like, you know, I love long midnight walks on the beach. Now no, it's like, no. Look, I know how to build a well. Like that's the kind of guy you need. But do you know how to build a well? Okay, yes. That's what I need to know.
Okay. Is it a real well or is it a virtual well? Because these days, now we're living in a lot of virtual environments. So, you know, can your date code?
A real well, okay?
You never know when those skills kick in. Like, have you yes. ever built a fire without a match? Like, can yes. you do that?
Yes, if not, those are the skills I'm looking for right now.
Yes, if not, you're not the man for me.
It's not right. the car. It's not the house. It's can you build a house? Can you build transportation? Can you walk? You know.
Right. If there are bears in the wilderness, can you protect me? Like I need some basic skills, right? If not, we not gonna get married. There is no future for us. Woo! This has been a fun show. It's been entertaining. It's been problematic, but you know what? We did it. We got through it. We are down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to speak directly to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and just let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. So we're going to go ahead and start with you, Oren.
So what I'd really love for people to understand is, first of all, it's okay to have a hard time. And to recognize that almost everybody's struggling right now in different ways and almost certainly in an invisible way. Like whoever you're talking to, they're struggling in a way that you cannot see. So have some faith in them. Have some faith in them that they can handle it, but have some faith that it's challenging for them. And to recognize, have a lot of self-compassion. We've been dealing with a lot and we want to be, we know that we can be at these higher levels and we will be. But today may not be that day, and that's all right. And if we're having a tough day, that's okay too. And if we want to come to more positivity and if we want to have more flow experiences, more creativity, we can do that and we will do that and we are going to develop those capabilities, but we're also going to have some tough days and self-compassion is the best way through that to accept the fact that we may not always be at our best in a given moment. And then the people that we work with or that we have to deal with on a daily basis may also not be at their best in a given moment. And that's okay. And that's also part of being better, doing better, and doing our best and being our best is also not being our best sometimes and accepting that that's going to happen.
Are you talking about me, Orin? I think that was personal.
I hope everybody's hearing that personally. I hope everybody, because we all do have experiences like that. And it's a daily struggle for all of us, you know, myself included, just, you know, having that self-compassion when we're not really doing our best and recognizing that that really is part of the process of being excellent.
Oh, came back with that compliment. I love it. And I will take it. This is the process I'm going through with all my technical difficulties to be excellent. Thank you, Orin. Sue, what do you have for us?
I think that if there's a message, it would be that the higher frequencies are joy, fun, and peace. And I think that regardless of what we're facing, if we could find a little bit of fun in it and find joy in it, it allows us to rise to our best, and blessings come and opportunities open up. In every time of trial, there are always opportunities. And as humans, we are born to overcome them. And we just need to get out of our own way and allow that to happen. And let your passion become stronger than your fears. And I think you'll surprise yourself.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I love it. I love it. I love it. What do your kids do, Sue? I'm just nosy, because like with a parent like you, like these kids have to be great and wonderful and successful.
I have one who was a master esthetician, one who's a student or is a special ed teacher. One manages the pet rescue down in Kansas City. One manages a golf course. One is a nurse at Mayo Clinic. They called her back into the emergency room. She's not a happy camper. I'm trying to think of who did I miss. One is a stay-at-home mom in Utah. So that's kind of the six.
That's beautiful. I'm pretty sure that's not the first time you had to ask yourself, who do I miss? With six kids, you probably had a lot of people, a lot of kids vying for your attention. But I could just tell you're wonderful, you're warm. So I knew your kids had to be wonderful people who are making, productive assets to society.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. Bob, what do you have for us?
Well, a couple of parting words. When Schmidt happens, keep your sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And realize and remember, life is a series of challenges. And this is just one of the many challenges we're going to face in life. And then shameless promotion is always good. Mm-hmm. So that's the book. If you want to do something in your community, because disasters are on the rise, weather disasters are happening all over. But this also will teach you about trauma and wellness activities that we all can do to stay balanced. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity, Sharifa.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining me. I have to definitely check out your book. Marlana, go ahead and take us out.
Thank you so much again for letting me come on. And everything that everyone said here was so valuable. I must say, Robert, I enjoyed what you had to say also in regards to just preparing for this time. So thank you so much. But yes, I just want to piggyback off of what everyone said. Definitely keep the smiles, keep it positive. Definitely keep, you know, moving forward, remaining motivated. During this time, you may feel as though you can't do anything, or you may feel hopeless or what have you. And this is that time to recognize that, honor that, and then go ahead back and reflect and say, you know what? I think I can make some lemonade with this lemon. So this is that time to, you know, you're going to see shifts happening. So this is the time for that as well. So welcome the shifts, welcome your new norm, and welcome and come back to Asherifa.
That's how you eat it. We are going out on a note. I want to thank all of you for hosting the show for me. This is the first hostless show that I've ever done. So thank you for being there for me. Thank you all for being a guest. I hope all of you decide to return. I don't know where we're going to go, Marlana. You're going to be like, we're on our 50th show. I don't know, but I would definitely love to invite all of you to return. I really appreciate you all today, your sense of humor, your stick-to-itiveness, your willingness to stay here through all the little glitches. So I appreciate that. I want to thank everyone who tuned in for today's show, everyone who's watching it live, who's watching me fall in front of the world. Thank you for tuning in today for this show. as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until tomorrow, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.